As the elves get busy for Christmas, so do the marketing madmen. Learn the winning strategies to attract new customers and keep that brand integrity intact like a perfectly wrapped present. Discover why experience-based gifts are the new stars on top of the Christmas tree and how brands like Grand Seiko keep their charm shinier than Rudolph's nose amidst constant sales. Our very own Santa of sophistication, Victor Johnson, unwraps the secret behind Grand Seiko's dazzling new boutique in Lenox, highlighting the magic of long-term vision exclusivity. All that and more in today's episode of The Marketing Madmen.
They say marketing is a madman's game. So now we turn it over to The Marketing Madmen with Nick Constantino and Trip Job.
Happy Saturday. Welcome to The Marketing Madmen. Nick Constantino and Trip Job here live from the Battery. It is, the air is nippy. It is Christmas time. Luckily, I did all my shopping already because my ADD does not allow me to wait to the last minute. Everything's done. Everything's packed. Everything's shipped. I'm excited about it. I get to enjoy the holidays. But Trip, how you doing, bud?
I'm doing great. I did the same. For one of the few times I got stuff done by 1st of December. So
yeah, we have a way of sucking the fun out of everything, don't we?
Yeah.
I mean, Halloween starts September 1st, then the second Halloween's done, all the Christmas stuff is there. You want to kill yourself by the music being played the 100th time. All you got to think in your head is, my goodness, baby, it's cold outside. It's such a rapey song.
Yeah.
How is this? How are we still playing this? But that being said, it's an oldie but a goodie, and I love it. So let's talk about the holiday season. Let's talk about some things you've seen. I want to put a big focus on luxury because we have a guest coming on, yep. Mr. Vic Johnson from Grand Seiko, who, I mean, they just opened a new boutique in Lenox for the holidays. Who better to hear about one of the world's most prestigious watch brands opening a brand new boutique 2 weeks before Christmas? What better to hear from? So we're going to have fun with Vic. But what are you seeing out there, Trip? What has stood out to you about the season? You know, year past 2 years, but what do you see out there? And then we'll go a little bit more specific about luxury.
Yeah, I mean, I think in general, the last year or so, the trends have been, you know, away from just things into experiences or something that really stands out.
Yeah, me and my wife looked at each other. We said, screw presents. And for Christmas and Valentine's, they were going to go to London for 4 days.
Yeah.
Like, why in Christ's name am I buying more garbage to have when I can go hop on a plane to London for, you know, not the same amount of money, but close when it's all said and done.
Yeah, and you know, I was actually at a presentation with the head economist for Huntington Bank, and he actually shared how much the economy has changed this year around
service-based
mm-hmm. and experiences. And,
yeah.
You know, there's a lot of factors to it.
That's why Live Nation's doing so well.
That's triple. Even talked about that in the prices. I won't go there because they'll take up all our time.
Yeah, but I mean, a change in demand leads to a change in prices.
Right.
But what you're seeing is the lower-level stuff that doesn't have the same fan base is going for peanuts on the dollar. It's the big events.
Right.
SEC Championship, concert.
And you guys get involved in it, but it's the events with the Braves. It's events with, you know, Georgia Tech and Georgia, and it's these experiences, these VIP packages, and I think you're seeing more and more of those. I'm actually seeing more of them offered.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, we've seen it's been a trend for a few years.
Used to be something that was only available to the bourgeois and the Uber elite.
Or the sponsors.
You know,
the head sponsors.
For sure.
Now anyone can get in.
All you got to do is sell your firstborn child and you're in.
Exactly.
It's that simple.
But I do see, I think that theme is coming out also in the holiday season and some of the gifts because it's something unique. I'm not giving you something
Cheeses
everybody
from
has
all over the world,
right?
Like that kind of stuff where you can't go to the store and buy it. It's curated. That's another word. I think curation is really important, right?
Right.
It's an experience that's done for you. That's why people love the on location, all those things. You get to, everything's taken care of for you. If you're going to spend that much money, why do you want to deal with the hassle?
Right.
So I agree with that. Now, one of the things I've noticed, sales suck. Everything's been on sale the whole year. So what Christmas sales, it's not even a sale anymore. They're just regurgitating whatever you've searched for the year and said, buy this.
Right.
So, like, some of the fun has been taken out of it. There's no, like, why are people lining up on Black Friday? Everything's on sale all the time nowadays.
Well, lining up?
Well, that's true.
Okay,
queuing
up online. I was like, wait a second. Did you actually go out on Black Friday?
Hell no. I have not been in a store.
I was playing golf on Black Friday.
God knows how. Actually, I played golf the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, but again, if you told me there was a store that I got to go into and have this earth-shattering experience that was going to, I was going to buy it and I loved it, I would go. They don't exist.
Right.
They don't exist. Oh, you know what they are now in the mall? It's all of the online people who had success online that some investors had opened a store. So they open a store. And in that store, like, all you do is try the stuff on and then you go buy it online.
Yeah.
And like, they only, now I think there is some value to, I got my wife an Aloe gift card and they only put it on sale like 4 times a year at 30% off. It's always the same sale and it's on everything. Okay. There is some value to that.
Yeah.
Because even 3 months is enough to know, looking at it at a full price, when you see it 30% off, you'll buy it. So I think there's something to that. And I think that bleeds in well with luxury. That's luxury. To me, the definition of luxury is something that it does not have, it has the pricing power to keep at a price that people want. That's luxury to me, because anything that has demand on it, the price is worth more.
Anything sold through Macy's does not have luxury on it.
Well, that's why they've cut so many. I also
that's
know,
why there's
Freakonomics
a sale every,
did a great,
that's a sale every day.
Freakonomics
there.
Did a great episode on, is the parade the most valuable thing they have? And that's what they said. They're like, dude,
I bet.
You couldn't even keep Nike. Like, and it's not offense to Nike,
yeah.
but Nike makes the full gamut of clothing, and they couldn't even keep it.
Yeah.
But the tricky part, though, is Macy's owns Bloomingdale's. So what do they care? They put all that stuff in Bloomingdale's. Yes. So they have both ends of the spectrum. So again, that's corporate greed more than it is anything else.
Right.
It's corporate greed. I think luxury, I think, look, the luxury market has not changed at all, right? Okay. You have to be committed to a brand. You have to have a long-term vision. You have to have influencers. I hate the word, but you have to have people of prominence wearing your stuff. That's never going to change.
Right.
And we're going to talk about Grand Seiko with Vic, because that's a great example. Grand Seiko, I got to make sure I say that right. You know, Rolex is the pinnacle, probably of luxury, probably in the world. It's probably the most synonymous thing. And the reason I say it, but what people don't know, Rolex is an institution. It's not a for-profit company. They don't have to declare earnings.
Yeah.
So all their reason is because it is a perceived sense of not being able to get it. That being said, they sell more Rolexes than almost any watches in the world.
Right.
Anyone can get one if you know the channels.
Right.
But because they don't share that information, nobody has a clue how many Rolexes are out there.
Right.
So, and even if you look at, there's what are we at? 7 billion people on Earth, right?
Yeah,
and they sell 5-6 million Rolexes a year. That's 0.01% of the people even getting access to it. So you still have that perception of not seeing it everywhere.
Yeah.
So I think they're the pinnacle. I think Grand Seiko has a great brand themselves, and they are approaching this differently from Japanese. They have a bit more craftsmanship, clear lines. But again, they're opening in Lenox Mall, a Japanese watch store boutique without the pedigree of around Christmas. So it's going to be a fascinating conversation. What else you seen out there?
You know, I think, and you're probably more in this area, but I've seen more around the, let's call it the kitchen, the cooking experiences. I mean, it can be, you know, products, seasonings, it can be, you name it. But I think this idea of let's give something that while it is a product, it brings people together because people enjoy the art of cooking and the entertainment and things of that nature. And I think that's been going for a year or two, but I've seen more of that this year.
I think that is a overcalculation, knee-gut reaction to the fact that restaurants are going to disappear.
Yeah.
I think that there are so many restaurants out there that are going to fold. And the reason is they've gotten so expensive. And they have to staff, they have to have people. So they're thinking people are going to start cooking at home and they want that same experience that they get in the restaurants because it's following the trend, right?
Right.
The hottest restaurants in the country, I've looked at every Michelin star, everything, are all like these weird cuisines from parts of the world that were ignored, right? So you're not Mexican, but like the south tip of the Baja Peninsula in this one town, that food, right? Georgian food from the country, Peruvian food was popular for a long time, but
yes,
the first Peruvian restaurant in Atlanta just opened. That's insanity.
Yeah.
So that you see that, and I think it's just following those trends, but I really do think that people realize how expensive it is. And, you know, give you an example. On the high-end side, the bourbon industry is getting demolished right now. The wine, they are cellars full of wine right now.
Wow.
Like, it's just so all the holiday gifts in the world, and wine's a great thing, but not if the person doesn't drink.
Good.
And I think people are more cognizant. They're more loud about it, right? If there was a person who didn't drink, he didn't walk around telling people he didn't drink. Nowadays, every ass that doesn't drink is like, I don't drink and I feel great.
Right.
It's like, okay, that's none of my business. Why are you telling me? So I think a lot of that shopping, and they're trying to follow trends and get out ahead of it or reacting to trends. But that's been the story as old as time.
Yeah. What else are you seeing?
You know, I think that everything is decorated for so long that everything becomes a holiday experience that by the time Christmas comes, you're just done with it. Like, everything has to be decorated. Every mall, every place, every store, every business, everything is decorated. And it takes some of the fun out of it, right? Like, it used to be you go to Fifth Avenue to see decorations, and it's like the most amazing thing in the world, right? Now Bob's Third House has to have a whole graphic display because it's become so cheap to do it because you buy everything from China for nothing. So, I hope we get to a point where it becomes more special and more about the moment than all the crap leading into it.
Mm-hmm.
But we shall see, my man. We shall see. We shall see. I also think that the luxury market as a whole is in for a reckoning. I think the targeting that people are able to do with customers, if you have a brand and a really good brand that you don't play that game and you establish your brand, once you do have access to targeting and income levels, and you can really hone in on who your market is, you're going to be unstoppable. It's On Shoes is a great example. They didn't start that way. They built their demand the old-fashioned way, and now they go in and hyper-target, and they are unstoppable right now.
Well, one of the things that will be interesting, too, is to see their perspective of the difference between, I'm going to call it, bite-sized luxury and larger luxury items such as, you know, expensive cars, right?
Six-figure cars, RVs, whatever. You can call it fake luxury. RVs, you can call it whatever it is, fake luxury.
Entry-level
luxury.
They're luxury
watch brands are a great example of that. Right. A Patek Philippe Perpetual is $250,000, right?
But, you know, you can also get a $1,500 luxury
gorgeous watch. Just watch that it'll last for the rest of your life.
And it's a lot different than, you know, buying a $110,000 Maserati.
Cars are the same. I have a Genesis, my Genesis, entry-level luxury. But if you drove my car in a $100,000 BMW, you would not feel that much of a difference.
Right.
So I think you're right. You're talking about that entry-level luxury has become an area of focus because it is – look, if you get in at entry level, you're more likely to go to the aspirational, bigger stuff also. So that's why Mercedes has always offered a $30,000 car. They don't make money on it. It's a piece of crap, but they've done it.
A family member wants a watch, and you're going, okay, for another $300-$400, I can get you something you're going to think about and have the memory for years and years and years.
Yeah.
That's an affordable luxury.
And I cannot wait to hear how Vic markets it, because that is an insanely competitive category. If you look, Fifth Avenue used to be clothes and housewares. It is freaking watch after watch because the margins are so high and because it's become such a desirable thing to show your wealth. You know, it's cars and watches. I mean, you know, I'm not going to say who told me, stripper in Vegas, but the only thing people look at to determine your wealth is your shoes and your watch. And that is from a stripper in Vegas whose only job is to discern wealth immediately. So shoes and watch. So if dudes are listening out there and you feel obliged to be at a strip club, make sure you got nice shoes and a nice watch on.
Christmas? For me, the opposite would be like
Christmas with talking about strippers? But the good ones still give gift cards away, so you never know.
Well, now you know how to either defend yourself or go on the offensive if you're going to go out to Vegas.
That's the move. So I can't wait to get to Vic. Trip, this will be the last episode that airs before the holidays. So happy holidays to you. Happy holidays to everyone out there. You've been listening to The Marketing Madman on Extra 106.3, and we'll be right back with Vic from Grand Seiko Boutique.
Now back to the Marketing Mad Men on Extra 106.3 FM.
Welcome back to the Marketing Mad Men. Nick Constantino here with Trip Jobe, and we're going to keep on right plowing through. So we talked a little bit about our special guest, and I say special for many reasons. One, because it is actually one of my most favorite brands in the world. I love everything they've done. But we're talking to Victor Johnson, who is the team lead. What do we want to call
for the general manager of the new Grand Seiko and Reed's partnership boutique at Lenox Square.
So a lot to unpack there, but first and foremost, let's talk about Grand Seiko. So one of the things that, so Seiko is a huge mega company, been around for a long time.
Since 1860s, yep.
Most people probably perceive it as like $50 watches that are like Mickey Mouse on them and stuff like that. Okay, so my first question, before we get to your background, how does a brand completely set off a separate line and now price it at the $5,000 to $25,000 range? What did you learn in the experience of seeing how they've positioned the brand? What did you learn about how to go upscale? Because it had to be a huge learning experience for you.
It was a huge learning experience. Grand Seiko is one of those brands I've always been infatuated with. Didn't know a lot about until Reed's reached out to me. But Grand Seiko was a division of Seiko. Seiko founded in the late 1800s in Japan. Grand Seiko started in 1960. And up until 2010, you could not get a Grand Seiko watch in the United States.
Well, you had to go back.
You had to go to Japan.
There are ways.
In 2010, we started some distribution, and then 2017, Grand Seiko broke off into a separate entity. So now Grand Seiko is its own company, and you can get Grand Seiko in the United States and different parts of the world.
Yeah, one of the things they did a really good job of was originally it was a Seiko logo with the Grand Seiko logo between it. So it was almost what they did with Hyundai and Genesis, and you kind of see that spinoff. I mean, the evolution is it's just cool because you actually see the evolution. Again, if you're a watch guy, if you go on eBay and you search Grand Seiko, you see this crazy evolution of what they were to what they've become. Talk a little bit about, I know precision and I know all those things, but talk a little bit about the movements, because spring drive in what I know about watches is high of level of watchmaking there is. Talk about that and how long that took to actually happen.
It's a high level of watchmaking, and we test our watches to be certified better than COS certification, which is used by Rolex, yep. Omega, other mm-hmm. brands yep. out there.
So that is the Swiss certification Swiss of chronometer.
So ours, we actually do our own testing yep. in-house that's 1 second plus or minus better than COS rating. Okay. So that's something we hang our hat on. It's Japanese craftsmanship at its best. Our finishing is called Zeratsu finishing.
Yeah. You're just hungry.
I'm just Zeratsu Zeratsu finishing, but it takes a watchmaker 5 years to learn how to finish our watches
yeah.
by hand.
But you could see it visibly, even from afar. Yeah. It's one of the only watch brands. I see it in yours, but if you look from afar, it looks like a mountaintop, like the peaks and valleys right. of a mountain
right.
and snow. It is an unbelievable
mountains
thing.
Mountains in Japan. So in 2017, we became our own entity. We started opening stores. The partnership with Reed's here in Atlanta, we're the fourth Grand Seiko boutique in the country. So we've got Grand Seiko in the front. It's partnered with Reed's Jewelers out of Wilmington, North Carolina, an 80-year-old family-owned business. And our president, Mr. Alan Zimmer, he's always wanted to come back to Atlanta in yeah. the watch space. And Grand Seiko provided us a great opportunity to do that and be in Lenox Square, one of the most luxurious malls in the United States.
I love it. And again, I wanted to unpack the watch stuff first because there's a lot more to talk about for marketing. The other thing that I love about Grand Seiko is most people scoff at quartz watches, yeah. but the way they built, I think it's the 9F, the model, but they built a quartz watch that is, I mean, it's more accurate. I mean, it pretty much will always be on time. I think I've seen a second by year.
Maybe 15 seconds a year. It's an amazing move.
But it also has the sweeping hands to look like an automatic, because that is the one thing those snobs, they know that little tick, tick, tick. That's right. A quartz watch because of the vibrations, but it's a sweeping hand and it is a pretty thing to look at. So I know the watch nuts, how they feel about quartz, but as a purist, they put a lot of time into even their quartz watches, which is a powerful thing.
A lot of time in the quartz watches, a lot of time in the movement. And one thing people don't know about Grand Seiko, we're more of an atelier brand. The components are made in Japan in one of our two facilities, but each watch is built by one watchmaker. So it's not a assembly line, it's not a machine, it's one man building each watch individually, which is amazing to think about in today's technology
For sure.
world, where watches are spit out day in and day out, ours are really a la carte.
So how do you tell that story?
Just like I did.
Yeah, there you go, that's why you're here.
Because Grand Seiko, since 2017, we've been our own entity, but a lot of people still don't know about us. So when we come in and clients start asking questions, tell me about this, is it Seiko or Grand Seiko? We tell the history of the brand, but we also say, look, the movements are amazing. Right. The cases are hand finished, and one watchmaker makes your watch from start to finish. That's a major selling point.
Yeah, but they have the scale, because when you hear that, you assume $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 more probably. Right. So they have the scale and they've been able to make this for everyone can have access to it, which I think is also a really powerful tool. Look, I'm not saying anyone can afford to buy a $3,800 watch, but I'm saying most brands don't start their price level there where it's relatively attainable. And man, you don't have to change a quartz watch battery for 10 years. And if it's working at 1 second a year, that's insane when you think about it,
amazing.
The value proposition.
Amazing. And one of the things we learned in training as we had the HQ team come down and help us out is I'm a boxing fan, so this kind of resonated with me. Grand Seiko, we punch above our weight class.
For sure.
We're a welterweight or a middleweight that punches like a heavyweight.
For sure.
So when you see a high beat movement or one of our GMTs, it's selling for anywhere from $6,000 to $7,000. With all the work we put in that, another brand would have that watch probably north of $10,000.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. You get a lot of watch and you get a lot of history and prestige at a value price.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So high beat, let's cover that one real fast because it's one of my favorite parts. High beat means it beats at $36,000.
$36,000, it's basically a beat.
It's not 28, it's 36, so it's 36, it goes faster and sweeps all the way across, which is another powerful thing. And for those that don't know the way watches work, you wind a spring, or in this sense, you wind up a spring, which is why it unwinds and how the watch moves. So if you're doing that faster, it should go out of power quicker, but it's still got 60, 70 hour power reserves also.
The high beat's got a 3-day power, 72
Insane.
Hours. We've got some of our movements that have it. 8-day power reserve.
Insane.
Wow. So just absolutely
insane. All right, so I'm done geeking out, Trip. So the watch.
Yes.
So let's rewind a second. So you're a expert in the luxury retail space. Talk a little bit about how you got there and talk about what the heck that means.
I've been blessed. I started my career in the late 80s in Atlanta at Macy's. I was in a salesperson executive training. After about 5 years at Macy's.
We're going to have a lot of questions with Macy's there. I think we'll end with a little talk of where went wrong with Macy's. But
I can tell you what, I was there when it went wrong.
We're going to have that conversation at the end. We know second and third.
Let's make sure we have a grand second here.
I was blessed to be recruited to Saks Fifth Avenue. I was at the Saks here in Atlanta for 8 years. My last couple years there, I ran the men's division. I was the group manager of men's. Got selected to go out to San Francisco. in the early 2000s, and when men's clothing was still king. Guys were buying 6, 7, 8 suits a year, Armani, Zegna, yep. Brioni. Huh. So I came back to Atlanta in 2002, and I've been blessed to be recruited to some great brands. I worked for Ralph Lauren, Giorgio Armani. I spent 5 years at the Torno store in Atlanta. And as a watch geek, that was a dream job.
That's it, yeah.
I spent a couple years at the Zegna boutique, and I've always been blessed to be recruited to different things. And
yeah.
I was coming back from lunch one day and saw the PXG watch store being built.
Yeah.
Went home, updated my resume, and I got to work in the golf space for 3 years. So, yeah. But this opportunity with Grand Seiko came about. It was really cool. They reached back out to me, having seen my photos on LinkedIn and my history. I was a watch guy. They were really trying to launch the brand in Atlanta. And mm-hmm. I was fortunate to be right there at the right time with Reeds and Grand Seiko.
Yeah, and it's you're going from something like PXG, which was a complete startup in the luxury space, which is near impossible to do, by the way. You don't get many startups in luxury that they've been able to do. That's another story for another time. But Grand Seiko, they more have the pedigree. They're coming into a new country. They are very traditionally Japanese. And so this is a this is still a different country. Atlanta's a different city in a mall, which is not as big there. So I have to imagine that that search took a long time for them to find the right person. But what was it about the connection you made with them that they felt like you were the right guy?
I think my history in luxury and in the market, my time in watches, and mm-hmm. being able to be a part of like events and golf tournaments to really just get the brand out there. That's what we're doing. That's why we're here today.
For sure.
We want to get the exposure with Grand
Seiko. Storytelling is unbelievably important.
With a family partnership with Reed's Jewelers, it's great. We've got Reed's has stores all over the country. We've got 65 stores as far north as Delaware, down to Tampa, over to Texas, but this is our sixth what we call mono brand store. So we ran three stores for Tag Heuer in different markets.
Yep.
We have an Omega boutique in Charlotte, a Tag boutique in Charlotte, and now we just opened the Grand Seiko Reeds combination here in Atlanta.
I love it, and I think it opens us up for a little conversation with the watch industry as a whole. So you mentioned a lot of the pedigree brands. We don't need to get into the brands, but talk about how they sell their watches and distribute, because a lot of people are trying to fix and change that model. They want to go more direct to consumer. They want to remove the middleman. They want a little bit more control. Even with Rolex buying Boucherer, who now owns Torno, has created this whole chain of events. Does Patek Philippe really want Rolex selling them? Talk a little bit about the space and how we've gotten here and how a partnership like Reed's and Grand Seiko came about.
It's an interesting partnership because for a while you had stores like Torno that had 18 different watch brands. And then, of course, there was our competition, Watches of Switzerland, Mayors, they had Rolex, Omega. So you had these interesting positions where big stores had multiple brands. Now brands are kind of going to go out on their own, kind of. Grand Seiko wanted to partner and be in Atlanta, so we partnered with Reed's. You've got other brands and stores. They're finding it interesting where the brands can supply the watches, and companies like Reed's will supply the manpower, the managers, the advertising. Right. So it gives brands like Grand Seiko the space in a market, but they rely on brands like Reed's to supply the manpower and the selling know-how.
But does it also allow then your partner, Reed's in this case, to extend outside of just watches because of your consumer with but still having the focus on Grand Seiko?
Absolutely. It's kind of a double win for us because we've got the Grand Seiko brand out front, we have the Reeds in the back, but we've got our own online store. So let's say you walk in and you have a great conversation with me, we sell you a Grand Seiko, but I need something for my wife. So I can pull up the iPad, we can go through the Reeds inventory, and you can pick out something for your wife. We call it DTC, direct to consumer.
Sure.
You can have it in your house in a couple days, and you could soften the blow by that watch you didn't need with a piece of jewelry for your wife.
Or the other way. You're like, wait a second, I'm about to spend $30,000 on my wife. I deserve something here.
Exactly.
This is not how this works.
Exactly.
Well, that's what Nick and I talk a lot about lifetime customer value, and I think that's one of the intriguing things in the luxury watch space is not that people may not have a couple of watches, but how do you create that larger lifetime customer value? And it sounds like this is an opportunity.
It is. And our president, Mr. Alan Zimmer, they believe in not just family business, but treating customers like family. So if I have a great relationship with you or Nick and we're still talking about watches, and oh my God, my anniversary is next week, or the big holiday coming up, Christmas, my wife doesn't know what she wants. Like I said, we pull up the iPad and we search and we find that perfect gift for you.
I love it. I think it needs explanation. And I think you need to be doing things like this because it's jarring, right? It's like, oh, here are these gorgeous watches and here's this boutique on the side, and like you have to explain to people the setup and why it exists and why Grand Seiko went to go to Reed's, right? Because of the pedigree you guys have, and it's like one of those match made in heaven. And it's not women buy this and men buy this. There are plenty of women buying nice watches, and there are plenty of Grand Seiko watches that are made for women.
It's funny in that space. Some of the women's watches are, you know, smaller, 28, 30, but we're seeing women in the last few years in the watch business. They're buying that 38, 40 millimeter.
Isn't that
watch.
Funny? Because men's watches are going smaller.
Smaller. Right. So women's want to go. So there's kind of this really odd dynamic. And like you can put a watch that's a 38 millimeter next to one that's 42, and you can find a use for both watches. So
yeah, for sure.
For years, it was just everyone was going bigger, 44, 46, even some 48 millimeter watches. Now we see it kind of coming back to where that classic look, that 38 to 42 millimeter, is the sweet spot.
Yeah. So
yeah, and when it got too big, you know, the iPad was actually on your wrist.
That was Breitling. Too much. Yeah. Breitling. I'm going to go a little off topic, but sure. Being that we will, this episode will air this weekend. I mean, yeah. The holiday season is what is going on in the mall? You're there. You're looking around. I mean, I'm curious. I came in to see you, and it is the first time I've been in a mall, if I'm being honest, around the holidays. And I was shocked. Most of the stores are actually just online brands that have opened a store. So what is going on in the mall? Is this demise of the mall really happening? It looked like there were plenty of people in there. What are you seeing? Let's take Seiko and Reed's out of this. What are you seeing going on in Lenox Mall?
I'm seeing a combination of things. The whole Black Friday, as we remember it years ago, where it's this mass rush to the mall, that's really slowed down in the last few years.
They're also pacing the sales over
and sales start in October, good Black Friday here. So people are much more deliberate. They want to find what they want. They want to get in and out, whether that's in store. I think the key for brands like any brand, a luxury brand, is going to be relationships. If I have a relationship with you, that makes you want to come to the mall on a Saturday at 3 o'clock to pick up that watch. Because you could easily go online and put in a couple of numbers, put your credit card in, and get it shipped to your house.
Yeah.
But
right.
I think the key for luxury going forward, whatever brand you're in, is people want experiences and they want relationships. If we can deliver on relationships, the business will come.
Yeah.
The idea of the
easier said
personal
than none.
Consultant, right, that understands you and your family and may call you up in September with an idea.
And I tell my colleagues all the time, the people that work with me, I don't say work for, I say work with me. Nick just bought a watch from you. Don't just call him when he's talking about another watch. How's your anniversary? How was the event? You wore the watch to a special event. How did it go?
Right.
Build the relationships. That's what keeps long-lasting business.
Yeah,
that's what we're
seeing.
What's most brands, whether it be the big department stores like Neiman, Saks, it's more about personalization these days than it is just about consuming.
And I love what you said, because we're talking about general. It's not just about Seiko or the watch industry, but it is a lost art. We were talking in a previous episode, just customer service is over. It doesn't exist. It's impossible to get a hold of brands, and people don't understand the lasting impact that those poor experiences make, right? So if you're going to invest all this time in the real estate and the training the people, are they equipped to have the conversations that extend beyond just the products in which you're buying?
Yeah.
And if they're not equipped to do that, then they're just salespeople.
They're not brand ambassadors, they're clerks.
And we have done a very poor job of breeding clerks. And it's loyalty is out the door, we know that. So it's really hard, I imagine, to get people. One of the things you said about Tourneau, well, it's impossible to not show favoritism,
right?
If you've been a Rolex guy your whole life, how are you not gonna push somebody to Rolex, right? You know what I mean? It's like when a player in the NBA came from New York, what do you think? They're not going to walk into Madison Square Garden and be like, oh my God, this is the best thing in my life. You can't hide that.
Right.
So, but for you guys, you have a honed line. How are you training people? What is the advice? How much of it is, hey, because you better have that product knowledge. If you don't, it's going to be impossible to build a relationship.
With online shopping and internet, most clients know more about the watch you're looking for than you do. So you've got it. We did extensive training, studying. We constantly drill. We constantly go to YouTube. And if there's a watch I like, if it's a slow period, I tell them, hey, pull that watch up. The one you like is easy to sell. Talk about the one that you're not as familiar with.
Yeah.
So learn it. So when the client comes in, it's almost a give and take in education.
Yeah. Right. So you've done a good point. So that is about the clients who are already looking for you. Okay.
Right.
So let's talk a little about them. So there's two things that happen. One, they go look for a watch and they look and they have gray market Joma shop and it's $1,200, $1,500 cheaper. Mm-hmm. So what is the message to those people as to why they should come see you in the boutique versus buying that discounted version online?
There's a few reasons. One, when you buy online, you don't know where the watch has been, who's owned it, how they kept it, how they took care of it. When you buy a watch from Grand Seiko or Reed's, one, you get the history of Reed's, which we back all of our watches with our warranty. Grand Seiko offers a 5-year warranty from their timepieces. And if you buy it in a Grand Seiko boutique like we have here at Reed's, you get an extra year. So you get 6 years of warranty on the watch. That's something you can't buy from Jama Shop. You don't know who had it, who touched it, if it's been open,
And Grand Seiko will not have the warranty apply to something bought not directly through them, because again, they don't have that control, and they need that control, otherwise they're just losing money.
Yeah, when you buy the watch here at the store, I'm going to actually do the warranty for you. I'll go on the website and link it to your watch right before you leave. There's a lot of security.
That's valet service. That's what people want, right?
Store. So when you buy something online, you don't know what you're going to get.
Yeah. What about the because again, I'll nerd out for one more second trip. What about the boutique editions, the ones you can't get anywhere else, the ones you can't get online? Some of those colorways that you were showing me that are just one of a kind. Talk about those, because I think that's as big of a draw to the store as there is.
It's a huge draw. In fact, we opened the store in October, and Grand Seiko did save some of the limited edition pieces for us that were sold out throughout the country, throughout the world. They saved it for the boutique. We had a gentleman come in, and he's been looking for this watch for months. He couldn't find it. And I said, well, hold on, but I got a surprise for you. I go back in the safe and pull out this beautiful, it's the Tokyo Lion stainless steel red dial chronograph, fantastic watch. He bought it on the spot. So there is some uniqueness about that when there's only 1,300 in the world. That's sort of a sweet spot number for
Grand
Seiko.
But you can't give away too many, because then the limited edition, so you can't promise that experience to everybody. I'd imagine when you give that experience to somebody, their likelihood to come back is triple, quadruple.
He bought another watch last week.
The next day.
So, and another limited edition. So we're actually going to start what we kind of call a right of first refusal for some of our VIP clients, because those watches do come out, and maybe it's, if it's 1,000 unit worldwide, the United States may only see 80 of those watches.
For sure.
So each retailer may get one or two.
And that's part of the changing of the watch industry is, so look, the quick version of this, without naming names, is there are some brands out there that have had the benefit of creating their own demand because no one knows how many watches they make. So they have perceived a huge amount of demand when realistically it's really just a regular supply demand curve. Correct. So a lot of brands are trying to fake their way into that, and everything is a limited edition, or they're trying to mark it up. This is worth $4,000, but you can get it for $250. And I think that was a trick for a little while, but I think the watch industry has weaned out a lot of the Bitcoin millionaires and a lot of that stuff, and it's starting to become real again. So you see brands, they're changing their strategy. You mentioned Tag. I know they're one. They want their own boutiques. They botched it. They were devaluing them. You can buy a $400 Tag. No one's going to buy a $14,000 watch if you can buy a $400 watch.
Right.
So talk about what the future looks like and how you're being trained by Grand Seiko to talk about, these brands. This is what a limited edition is. This is how we control this. This is how we regulate. Talk about that for what it looks like for the next couple of years.
I think it's going to be great, because as the Grand Seiko at one point, we had regional limited edition pieces. Now we're doing those worldwide. So you're going to see not a lot of limited, but special pieces. But there's also going to be that focus on the core collection, where it's whether it be the Diver or the GMT, where that watch is going to be available all the time. But for the collector, those limited edition pieces are going to be even more valuable
Like there's actually a strategy. So you've got a portfolio strategy that is looking years into the future, unlike what you described was people either jumping on trends, jumping on opportunities, and not thinking about what's the longer term.
Well, for the record, I'm pretty sure, quote me if I'm wrong, I might get the years wrong, but the spring drive movement was made for 20 years before they actually put it out. Before they put it out. So they started working on something, and just the movement alone took 18 years. Yeah. If you're going to put that much attention into a movement, you better have a plan for the future in the long term,
which I
think is fantastic.
The amazing thing about Grand Seiko, and I'm sure you feel it when you touch it, because we make our own steel in Japan, we make our own titanium, so there's a density and a feel to our watches that don't feel like other brands.
Tactile. It makes its way through the polishing like you talked about, because there's many other kind of polishing and special things that they do. The snowflake one is one of the most famous ones, just because of the kind of white and how it looks. The lacquers. I mean, again, I'm trying to avoid nerding out on all the watch stuff. Yeah. But one of the questions when we get back from the break, especially, we're going to talk a little bit about, that's great for people who know the brand. How are you an ambassador to get new people to the brand?
That's
equally as important. So we're going to come back from the break with that. Before we do, what does the holiday season look like? You can't put sales up, okay? And it destroys a luxury brand. The word sale is almost dirty, okay? So what is the strategy? What differentiates you in the holiday? How do you do that? Because everyone else has a sale. Are you just saying, oh, you know what? You run your sales, drive them into the boutique, and we'll walk them in here once they're already in the mall. What's the strategy?
The strategy is it's about engagement. getting that client in, because as they come in through the mall, and we're not on sale. We're not a sale brand. Right. We do have some promotions on the Reed side, but Grand Seiko is a full price year in.
Right, which helps you, because now you get into, if you're coming in for jewelry, I'm not saying the chance is 100%, but if you can have the disposable income to buy a nice piece of jewelry, you probably have the disposable income to buy a nice watch too.
Correct. Right. So we're seeing that, again, clients are more direct. They know what they want. They're coming in with a mission. Guys are coming, I want to see these three watches. They may know the name of the watch and the model number better than we do. So for us, it's about getting them in and giving them that education and just facilitating what they want to already have in their mind.
And that true customer experience.
Correct.
Does it? Do you see, let's dirty words, do you see people coming to see you and then they buy the watch online?
No.
At someone else, that's good.
No,
that's important.
We've actually had people who shop, look online.
And then come to you.
And then come to the store. So there's still people that want to come to the brick and mortar store. Because when you make, it's not like you're buying a shirt or a golf shirt or a pair of shoes. A watch is an emotional investment. I tell guys all the time, unless you get a Holy Grail watch, you're not buying it for the investment. You're buying it for the emotional attachment.
Yeah, and if you think you are, then you've already have the money to buy them and have the back end set up.
So the emotional connection for the watch is, and the experience is just as important as the timepiece.
And I think all, and we'll go into this another time, but I think all watch people go through those phases, right? I first buy a watch, it was like Swiss watch. And I was like, okay, well, now I'm bored here. Then it became complications. Then it became in-house movements. And you're always searching, and that's not how, does the watch talk to you? Is there a connection that you feel? And let's be honest.
Do people react to it?
And do hot chicks compliment you on it? Let's be honest. Let's call it what it is. So,
hot chicks are cool guys like you.
There you go. That's all you need. That's all you need in life. All right. So we'll be back after the break. We're going to continue the conversation. We're going to talk about how getting new customers, and we're going to also talk about where Macy's went wrong. You've been listening to Marketing Mammon on Extra 106.3. We'll be right back.
Now back to the Marketing Mad Men on Extra 106.3 FM.
Welcome back to the Marketing Mammon on Extra 106.3. Tripp had a sudden herpes flare up, so he left us. But me and Vic are here, and we're still talking. So Vic, so talk about the store. Talk about where it is. Talk about a fine. I know you're doing a fun event. I see Sip and Shop, and honestly, like, that's when I make my dumbest decisions, and all my greatest purchases are when I'm drunk.
So talk a little bit
about it. Talk about the location in the store, where it is in the mall. Let's get granular. It's a big mall. Where it is, the incentives for people coming in, and talk about the Sip and Shop event.
We're right in the middle of Lenox Square. We're in between Bloomingdale's and Macy's on the main level, just across from the Mont Blanc store, Sandro store. So we've got a really great location in the center of the mall. You can park in any of the parking lots and get to us relatively easy. We've been in Lenox. We opened October 12th, so we're coming up on our second month in the mall. So it's a really fun time to be a part of this brand and be part of Grand Seiko and Reed's Jewelers. So.
Yeah, love it. And look, this is what I tell people. If you're shopping and you're bored and you're overwhelmed, this is a tranquil space. Go enjoy yourself. I love it. I mean, there's something about, right, like, and we'll talk about what Macy's went wrong, and I don't want to bash them, but you walk into a Macy's and it looks like someone took a grenade, threw it in the middle, and the clothes just fall wherever they do, and that's it. It's not a good experience. It's nerve-wracking. It's like, I can't find what I want. You walk into Grand Seiko, and again, that influence from Japan is abundantly there, but it is calming. You open with the Heritage collection, so you're not overwhelming them with the sport models, right? It's the Heritage. You come in, everything's nice and tame. The pictures are easy, clean, white lines. Go check it out. Even if you don't buy, it's not a bad thing for you not to buy. Understand the brand, learn. It's half a museum if you do it the right way.
It's an elegant space. They did a great job building it out. It's an elegant space with a really intimate shopping experience.
Yeah, and not to bash any other brands, but there are some brands that do the opposite. They'll just hit you in the face with all these models and sports and rah, 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 which there has its audience for. But if you need a break from the mall, or you want to go shop for yourself, or you know you're going to get crappy gifts and want something that is better for yourself, please go check out the Grand Seiko Boutique. Tell them about the Sip and Shop event, because that's also a fun time to come by.
Excellent. Coming on the 19th, we've got people that hoping we'll attract people that haven't gotten those Christmas gifts yet, need that last minute. So on the 19th from 3 to 7, we're going to be in the store. We're going to be offering champagne, wine called the Sip and Shop. So you can come into a relaxed atmosphere, meet my team, look at Grand Seiko. We also have the Reed's Jewelry line that we can show you as well. So something for yourself or that loved one in your life. So it'll be a great time to come by the boutique and get those last minute Christmas shopping needs done.
Love it, dude. I absolutely love it. I think you have given reasons to go into the boutique, because I think that's an issue. I think that you know what your fan base is, and it is much bigger than people think it is. You've covered that you guys punch above your weight, which I think is a really important thing. And again, without naming other brands, the quality of the watches are much higher than some that cost 2 to 3 times as more. And again, I will not name brands.
Right.
the way that you steal, the way the lines are cut, one person making them, the time and effort that went into the movement. I mean, one of the big problems in the industry now is everyone's saying it's a manufacturer in-house movement, but these companies are so big and vertically integrated that IWC and Bauman Moshe are making the same movements. That's not how it should work. Right? You can't do it that. Don't tell me it's in-house if 16 brands are using it. No worse than Swatch Group. Every brand has the same 80-hour movement in it, but they all call it a different thing. So like, this is an in-house special edition. And I get it, and I'm not bashing them because there's a place for that. And Swatch Group has probably made some of the best watches in the history of the world over the run, but it is an interesting thing for how it is and how movements and how all that stuff works.
Yeah, and again, with us, it's one watchmaker making the watch from start to finish, that gives you that intimacy and that atelier feel that you're not going to get from other brands.
Yeah, I love it. So we're going to change subject, but before we do, I see you're wearing a Sport GMT. What is your favorite watch that you can afford to buy from them, and what is the favorite that maybe you can't?
The favorite one that I can afford to buy is this one I'm wearing. It is a 44-millimeter stainless steel blue dial GMT time.
Blue and white. Blue and white split, which is the best part about a GMT. Blue and white bezel. Yep.
And second time zone, the high beat movement.
Yep.
So, and it's got a three-day power reserve. So
love it.
If I'm going to play golf for a couple days and don't want to damage this one, I'll leave this on the counter, come back, and it's on time.
So love it.
That's one that I love.
Let me throw in mine that I can't get, and then you go. Okay. The one that I love the most... My favorite one that I ever saw was the Nissan, the special edition one.
Yes.
It was similar to that, except it was a much bigger chronograph and more white in it. But it was, I think it was celebrating the, GT. It was some kind of very limited edition, but just the most gorgeous, gigantic, like it's gaudy. I'm not going to lie. But if you're going to spend that much money, people should see it from afar.
One of my friends and golfing buddies, when we opened, called me, tried to get that timepiece, and
They didn't make a lot of them. They didn't on purpose. Because again, look, Nissan is a brand that has botched a lot of things. So the fact that Grand Seiko did this, I'm sure they were like, let's make this a limited edition.
But still highly sought after.
Gorgeous. Yeah. Gorgeous. I mean, it was only retail for 15, 16 grand. It wasn't like it was outlandish, but you know, some of the best ones were, right? The Daytonas that everyone were chasing with Zenith movements in them, those were not expensive watches when they came out. Nowadays, which is ironic because the most sought after Rolex watch doesn't even have their own movement in it, but we'll save that for another time. Sure. All right, what about you? What's the one you oh my goodness, I need this.
It's in our masterpiece collection.
Okay.
Beautiful 44 millimeter on a white dial, white birch dial with a black alligator strap. And I took a look at it, fell in love with it, and then someone told me that it cost $59,000.
So ooh, why? Gold?
It's a platinum.
Platinum, that's
platinum
why.
Platinum exhibition back with an 8-day power reserve.
Got it.
Yeah, if I wake
got
up
it.
Tomorrow.
Complications are just straight up.
8-day power reserve, masterpiece movement, so.
But no chrono, no tax, just
a straight, beautiful, elegant timepiece.
Yeah.
That if I wake up and I've won the lottery, that's one that's going to come home.
And that's another fun part about watches, right? Is that you get into it like, wait a second, well, I need a diver watch. Right. Do you dive? No.
No.
I need a pilot watch. Do you fly? No, but I need one.
Whenever this goes in the pool with me, I'm going to be walking around with my hand up. I'm not going to submerge it.
The best part,
and it's
though,
it's got 200 meters water resistance.
Is what they forget is the dress watch. They forget that you don't need a chrono if you're sitting in a black tie event. It looks ridiculous to wear a 16-millimeter thick watch under a tuxedo. So they forget the dress watch. And then I think you age into the dress watch. And that is where my head is at now. I'm looking. I want one because that is just, you're not going to wear it every day.
Right.
But it has that special spot for when you really got to blow somebody away. And the worst part is 1 in 50,000 people will even know what it is. But the ones that do... Do
it's like you're so, in the club. People know, no.
Richard Mille, you're rocking. All right. So the last thing, we're gonna end on this. So there's been a lot of discussion. Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. Where did Macy's go wrong? Where did they lose those luxury customers? And do you think they can turn it around? Loaded question.
I think they would have a hard time turning it around.
Okay.
When I worked for Macy's in the late 80s into the mid 90s.
Heyday. 70 to 90s was the heyday.
And I was in the men's division. The assortment in the men's department was on par with the product you saw at Neiman Marcus. They really were going after that luxury client. You could build a career at Macy's, starting in sales, going into management. Now, after the Federated merger, they just went completely moderate.
But I heard it was because they screwed the buyers from those brands so bad, and they tried to use purchasing power that they priced all, even Nike left. I mean, they priced everyone out because people were like, on your terms, it doesn't make sense for us to do business with you.
Yeah, they would charge those brands for certain space on the floor. It's like you want to charge Guess or Nike to pay for space when they're driving this part of your
business. They all went through consolidation. I mean, there's one brand that owns Tommy Hilfiger, every one of those people. You think Kate Spade's still involved in this stuff? I mean, these people are so far removed that they've, to a certain extent, there's a couple that have done a really good job. And look, the watch space is a different beast, right? Fifth Avenue, I grew up in New York City, used to be clothing stores and housewares. It is watch stores on every corner of Fifth Avenue. It is insane. Yeah. And the only thing I would recommend if a watch company is listening is don't be such douchebags, right? I can afford any watch in there, and they were such pricks to me when I came by. You just saw the look of like disdain on it. And meanwhile, I was wearing probably an $8,000 Omega watch, and they didn't even look past that because they want the fancy bags and all that stuff. I get what they're trying to do, but be careful. There's an industry out there.
I was traveling a lot over the summer with Reeds, and I went into one of the big box stores that had multiple watches. And I was wearing a beautiful Panerai. I had on a really nice suit, and not one person spoke to me as I walked through the store. I had to ask for help. Now, was I going to buy anything that day? No, but they didn't know that. So the snobbery around luxury watches is real. And I think brands really need to take a look at that. That's why it's beautiful to work for a brand like Grand Seiko that was really trying to get our client base out there. The brands like a brand like Reed's, where we're very customer centric, that's what's going to separate us as we move forward in the watch, not just the watch space, but also in the jewelry and the luxury space.
All right, last question. Yep. So Christmas is now. Let's fast forward a year in Christmas. Okay. So what does the clientele look like? What changes about the store? Are there anything that you've seen that you need to change, or are we just a straight operation, set it, forget it? What do you see the next year look like, next Christmas look like?
I think it's going to be great because we're getting the brand, both Reed's and Grand. Reed's was in the Atlanta market years ago, so we're back. Grand Seiko is new to the market. So I'm really excited about the next 12 months because we've opened up just kind of quietly, advertising starting with us today. Yep. But so I'm really excited about the next 12 months. I think growing the brand Grand Seiko in the market is going to be amazing, as well as growing the Reed's footprint. So.
Absolutely
that's
love
where
it.
I think we're gonna, absolutely, that's where we're going to win over the next 12 months.
Well, this has been a fun conversation. It went by fast. We try to keep the watch nerd talk to a minimum. If you can't tell, I'm a little bit of a fan. We know Vic is too, slightly. But it's been great. Tell them one more time where to find you. Tell them the hashtags. Tell them to find Grand Seiko if they wanted to start looking. Where's a good place to start?
Grand Seiko, GrandSeiko.com, but also Reed's Jewelers would take you to the Grand Seiko site and our inventory. But again, we're in the middle of Lenox Square Mall on the main level, on the main drag. So please come by. We're open Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. On Sundays, we're noon to 6. We have a fun event coming up on December 19th, a sip and shop from 3 to 7. So come by, have a nice glass of wine, glass of champagne, a Japanese whiskey or Japanese beer, and we'd love to show you the store and show you around.
So that's awesome.
Looking forward to seeing you, and thank you for having me out today.
Well, thanks, Vic. I appreciate it. You've been listening to the Marketing Madman on Extra 106.3, and we will catch you next week.